love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Yo, Nicole.
What's up, Rolando?
Age-old question, tale as old as time. Which big monster are you rooting for? King Bowser or Donkey Kong?
Donkey Kong all the way.
Really? Now Bowser? Bowser's so cool. But I got my monsters mixed up. We're not talking about Donkey Kong or King Bowser. We are talking about King Kong and Godzilla. Now, who are you rooting for?
Oh, I have a clear winner here, and I actually want to see if you could guess it.
Are you rooting for King Kong?
No.
Oh, Godzilla?
100%.
Interesting. Okay. Eddie, who's yours?
Godzilla.
And why Godzilla?
I don't know. It's always been my fan favorite.
Oh, okay. So you guys are Japophiles is what I'm taking away. And I am the only one who is here for American sovereignty, and I'm going with King Kong.
Yeah, well, that's actually kind of problematic since, you know, we all know what King Kong is. Well, an allegory
we do know what
but we'll get into that
in
a second. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about
unoriginality.
Been a really big blockbuster. I think it's probably the biggest so far, 2021. People are going back to the movie theaters to watch this movie. Did you guys watch it at home or did you go to the theater?
I'm not paying for movies unless I absolutely have to, and this one is available on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And as a result, I'm just going to be like, well, I'm staying home and watching it. And you know what? Hollywood is probably listening and they're being like, oh no, this was a mistake. Why did we do this year?
Yeah, if you're paying for a subscription monthly for HBO Max, then why would you pay just to watch what you could watch for free at a theater for like $20?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much a movie ticket costs these days. I'm assuming it went up.
I'm guessing probably $15 easily.
Easily. Right. And then popcorn, no. So, yeah. So I watched it at home, too. And I'm just glad that I didn't waste too much money on the experience. But that's also because I'm poor. Of course, if we're going to talk about Godzilla versus Kong, we have to talk about the history of these movies. Right. Because, is this a remake, reboot, revival? This is kind of a sequel. Well, yeah, it's a sequel that's based on a rebooted franchise of two separate prolific entities.
And technically kind of, I guess, is a remake because this as I come to learn, yes, these monsters have fought before, so
they have this is not their first rodeo. So
so
I think that this is just, for me, I kind of hopped on the chance to talk about the original monster movies, you know, set up the circumstances when we first met these monsters, when they were created, why they were created, and then pitting them against each other. So we're going to talk about the first film of the bunch to come out, which was King Kong from 1933.
Correct.
Then we're going to go 21 years into the future, talk about Godzilla from 1954. Mm-hmm. Then from there, we're going to talk about 1962's King Kong versus Godzilla.
Ugh.
And then last but not least, we are not going to talk about Kong Skull Island. We didn't do the podcast back then, so we can't talk about the films that came out like right before the podcast came out.
Yeah.
We were going to do a two-parter, but then we were like, let's just do one episode. And
I'll be right up front. I'm not a fan of kaiju movies. I'm not a fan of big monster movies. I don't care. Never have. Probably never will.
Yeah. If it's not your thing, it's not your thing, you know?
It is not my thing whatsoever.
So, and I respect that. And then lastly, yes, we will end it with this Godzilla versus Kong 2021 movie. I just want to say right off the bat, King Kong was made in 1933. That is a pre-code Hollywood film. And Godzilla was made in Japan in the 50s. These are two of my absolute favorite time periods for cinema. I love American cinema.
Why?
I love pre-code American cinema, right? And we've talked about the code before on this podcast. In 1934, really, it went into enactment. But, you know, Hollywood was just such a scandalous place, you know, with the fatty art. But, like, people with just so many scandals, you know, rape allegations, murders, all these things going on, that they were like, somebody needs to put a lid on Hollywood. They made the code and said, you can only depict this and that, you can't show this, you can't show that, like really, really strong censorship that happened to Hollywood. and that lasted way into the 60s, right? So this is one of the last films that was made before that came into full, that was like enacted down on Hollywood pretty much.
Yeah. And what a last film, right? What a,
yeah,
what a way to end an era.
Films from 1927 to 1933 in Hollywood are just such a surprise, such a delight, and way more modern than you would think of a film. Because, you know, sometimes people look at old Hollywood and like, this is tame. Why aren't they kissing? You know, where are gay people? Where all this stuff? Yeah. And it's like, the code, guys, the code. Then also, I just want to say that I love Japanese cinema. And I think that, you know, how like a lot of people love American cinema of the 70s because of what was happening in the country and all this stuff. Japanese cinema of the 1950s, you know, kind of like the immediate aftermath of the bombings and them rebuilding Japan, is some of the most insightful, heartbreaking, and just overall wonderful films that anyone would ever see came out of Japan in the 1950s. Seven Samurai, Tokyo Story, Ikiru, which I think you saw.
I have seen, yes.
Yeah. Sanchu the Bailiff. I mean, these are just some of the films that I can think of that have, for me at least, been life-changing, wonderful cinematic experiences. And I would even put Godzilla on one of them because I think Godzilla is way more profound than people are led to believe. So,
well, Americans are led to believe.
Americans. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Even though, even in Japan, though, I mean, first of all, it's been rebooted like six times. There's just so many movies. Godzilla has kind of lost why it happened, you know.
But correct.
We'll get into that in a second. But yeah, so I just want to state off the bat that I'm really biased towards these films in terms of I'm very endeared towards them.
You don't say.
Yeah, so, you know, if you didn't see that coming a mile away. But you would think that I would like the 2021 film because of these, and I didn't. But we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, I mean, that's the power of Hollywood storytelling from 1933. You're limited by what you can physically do, right? So you have to work around those limitations. It's a black and white movie, and how do they achieve a monster that's supposed to be like gigantic? You know, they use a mix of mostly stop motion, right? It wasn't even like a man in a costume, right?
Yeah, no, it was that. Yeah,
it was both.
It was mainly stop motion. I don't think there was anyone in a costume.
Oh, see, so no one even in a costume could have fooled me. And I think that one, the black and white, works to great effect. I think also Godzilla, considering this is the first, I've just seen it for the first time because I will admit this, I never cared for Godzilla because I just thought it was just like, you know, monsters fighting. That's all I grew up with, right?
Yeah.
Not even rewatching, just watching the Godzilla, I'm just like, oh, this is like a really good movie. This is a beautiful movie. This is kind of a tragedy.
Yeah, 100% is a tragedy. I think Godzilla comes more from that than King Kong does. So let's talk about both films, you know, briefly, because I feel like everyone knows at least the legend. But, you know, let's shed a little light on some things that you might have forgotten, you know, because of these characters being brought up again and again just to do things like fight and, you know, bring chaos. So 1933's King Kong pretty much tells the story of a huge, emphasis on huge, gorilla who we call Kong. And these people come to this island in order to monetize him, to bring him back to the States and, you know, pretty much make a business out of him. They use him and they exploit him.
Is he a gorilla or is he an ape?
I think he's a gorilla.
I forget what the difference is.
Yeah, there is. I'm not.
He's a simian of some sorts. That's what we can all agree on. A primate.
He is the eighth wonder of the world. Carl Denham is a filmmaker who wants to make a film with this, like he wants to make an authentic film. So he gets this whole crew, and among them is first mate Jack Driscoll and the woman that he brings with him, who her name is Ann Darrow. We learn is pretty much bait, even though she's the star of the movie. She's also pretty much bait for Kong. Right. And it's a very simple story. You know, there's them on the boat going to Kong. There's their time at Skull Island. And then there's when they come back and what happens when they bring Kong to the States and they try to exploit him, monetize him, and how just poorly it goes. Everyone knows Kong on the Empire State Building, right?
Of course.
It's just such an iconic scene. Of course, he was doomed from the beginning. Just something like that was never meant to succeed. He falls to his death, and they have the famous last lines of the film. You know, it was beauty that killed the beast. Because also, one of the most famous parts of this movie is that Kong is actually quite affectionate towards Ann Darrow. He looks at her as his pet. Mm-hmm. And he is wants to take care of her. Something that they expand upon in the 2005 remake, which they didn't in this film, right? And Darryl is just fucking petrified of him the whole time.
You're right, right, right.
She is not, and she doesn't want to be his pet. She doesn't look at him as anything as a huge beast.
Yes, very much a damsel in distress.
Yes. But also a great screamer, man. Faye Ray is Andaro screaming her ass off. The girl can scream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, more power to her in that way. Anyway, so that's the plot of this movie. You know, in 2021, almost 100 years later, while looking at the plot, a lot of people have kind of seen a lot of similarities in the story of Kong to the plight of African Americans in this country, right? That's something that Inglourious Basterds harped on in their joke when they were playing the game, and they're like, am I the plight of the slave in America? Oh, then I'm King Kong. Like, the similarities are just so strong that a lot of people have realized this. Was that something that you thought of when you watched this film?
Well, when I watched this film for the first time, I was like a kid still. Yeah. So, I mean, racism, I guess, maybe was a subject that I had seen on TV, like probably on Family Matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Carl confronted that racist cop. We all remember that moment. Anyway,
yeah.
But in terms, I don't think the racism of the film it didn't sting me when I first saw this movie. I was more just captivated by, like, you know, it's just like, oh, look, it's the monkey just running a rampage in the city. Fighting that dinosaur, right? I think that's the most iconic scene. Everyone remembers the Empire State Building, but the dinosaur fight, I think, for me was what made
the fights on the island are so impressive, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And just like such a crazy world. Like, what the hell lives on this island?
Right.
Yeah, me too. Growing up, I mean, I always just thought that this was a really entertaining, action-packed movie. I still think to this day this movie is very well-paced. Everything, like, the story moves along, the action moves along. It's only like an hour and a half. A little longer, probably, but
I think an hour and a half is right.
Yeah, okay, but yet it feels so fast, and it's such a ride. However, you know, when you look at it in that way, I think that the film is kind of ignorant to that. I think it's more so like addressing something that it's subconsciously referring to. Like, I don't think the film was any bit aware of that, especially when you like see that the way that they depicted the indigenous people, the natives to the island and stuff. You know, it's just definitely like ignoramus all around.
Right. I mean, this movie is a product of its time.
It's a product of its time, yeah.
You definitely do have to take things like this with not a grain of salt, but you have to just like, this is just the way the mentality was back then, and we just gotta take it for that.
But they were at least smart enough to somewhat humanize Kong. I mean, it would have been way more successful had Andaro maybe responded to him or somebody. They responded to him. Nobody really kind of took pity on Kong, so you never got to sympathize with the character. Like, you never got to have that resonating moment with the character. However, they gave him humanizing qualities, like the way that he felt protective over this girl.
Interesting. So it was, for me, this movie in particular, he was the least humanized, I think, in this film.
I mean, of course, compared to the later films.
I think also the filmmaker has spoken to this, right? That he wanted Kong to be more animalistic than I don't think he would have been down for Peter Jackson's version.
Oh, no,
King
I don't think
Kong.
So either. And I actually think Peter Jackson's version, nice in some ways, made him a little too much of like
human.
A dog or something or
yeah.
human or something.
I think it made him too human. Like, I think it made us like try to empathize too much with him, right? Because I think part of the appeal for King Kong is that he's a monster. He's not a monster. He's just a beast.
He is a beast.
And I don't think him being protective of Anne made him humanistic. I think that just made him like a dog is with a ball. You know what I mean? Like, it's a toy. This is how they just act.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see like love like we saw in Peter Jackson.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean,
right.
Well, that's the thing. To me, at least, it's a good balance of completely animalistic, completely beast, completely just like, oh, that's an animal. That's a wild, untamed thing. But then he shows these traits, like he's not completely consumed by his own, you know, animalistic traits or whatever. He actually has compassion within him. Of course, he's not able to ever really act on that or have that ability to, you know, expand on that with any character. So I also think in that way, you know, he's never ever able to show us more Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, for me at least, the right blend. I also felt like the movie was like pretty tragic in a way that it didn't mean to be. Like, it's tragic for like a person looking at it 90 years from now, like especially when he's tied up and people are like, the way that like he's displayed when he comes to New York.
Is that the
and
tragedy
stuff.
For you?
For
Not
me, that
dies?
Is a tragedy. Well, the whole story is a tragedy. It's also a tragedy of how, you know, we take animals and such for granted and how we treat them, you know, and like as a person who for some time was a vegetarian, whatnot, I'm just not okay with like violence towards animals. You know, I'm more so like, you could kill all the people you want, but the moment you fucking hurt an animal, I'm turning this movie off.
Oh my God, you're like Britta from Community. She can excuse racism, but she draws a line at animal abuse.
I do, because it's also like, one, pick on someone your own size, but that's like...
No, you don't want to excuse racism.
I don't want to excuse anything. I'm talking more so about animal abuse.
He set you up.
He did.
I did.
He
I'm did. Sorry.
Don't change the subject on me. Yeah, pick on someone your own size. Pick on someone your own fucking species. It's just an easy target. And like, what a
shitty
King
Kong
fucking
is like,
person to
like
abuse animals.
100 times our size, though.
It doesn't matter. They're the ones who came asking for trouble. He was totally fine on
That's
his
true.
Own
the natives,
there.
The natives are doing just fine with him on the island for a long time.
Mm-hmm. They're just like, all right, we have to make sacrifices every once in a while. You know, like
no
happens.
Big deal.
Anyway, so I think so much works about the movies. I think the music by Max Steiner is fantastic. It's just such impressive special effects for
Which I think was
day.
Also the first film to have like a full like orchestrated soundtrack also, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely, yeah. I think it's just so many things that worked for it. And the plot that, you know, has been retold and rescripted. You know, we did a special episode of an animated remake on this film.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that
one. I go back to listen to us review The Mighty Kong, which is now available on Blu-ray. And yeah, it's again, a tale as old as time, which is fitting being that it ends with that Beauty Killed the Beast remark. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a fun American film for sure.
It is a fun history. I think it's also, I don't know, it also, from my understanding, at least what I learned in, like, this is not even, like, film school. This is, like, actual college. Like, this is, like, a historically important film when it comes to filmmaking. We wouldn't have probably, like, a lot of these, like, monster stories if not for Kong.
That's true, yeah. I mean, he was very successful. Although I would give more so the credit to Godzilla, to be honest.
Well,
but,
Godzilla
yeah.
brought in a new craze, yes.
Yeah. He definitely was like when everything exploded, especially
like
in Japan.
Just storytelling, the way we were able to tell stories like back then. Like, I don't know. I feel like the power of Kong clearly transcends just time, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying
wow,
to be deeper.
That's a big
than
statement,
I,
yeah.
I think so. It is because there is a reason. I mean, this is a move. Like, let's say you're like the 1% of the world population that doesn't know King Kong. It has proliferated though through pop culture in such a way that like, but you know it, like you have absorbed this movie, if not by watching it, by just simply being in pop culture. You know what I mean? Like, I know only one person who might be the exception to that rule because he watches no TV or movies, and
Ramon,
you know, Ramon. Exactly. So that would be the one exception, but I don't know. I feel like this movie, for that reason, I think this is like a movie that everyone, when you say King Kong, and I wonder though, if people, because I instantly think of the black and white movie. I wonder if they think of the Jessica Lange version, which I think is just like not, I mean, poor Jessica Lange, how she had a career after that, because this is not her finest acting, you know?
Yeah, the 70s remake was I mean, you know, people from then know it, but it's not like that, like people were like, oh, it's so much better than the original. People forgot it existed, essentially.
No one says that.
Yeah,
you know?
No one. And
nor has anyone said that about the Peter Jackson movie.
I was gonna say, I think Peter Jackson is on the fast track to that. You know, these people think that these movies need improving, and no, they're fine the way that they are, and they held their place in pop culture the way that they are.
Well, I think the thing that, so I think the filmmakers miss the mark on what makes King Kong so epic. They really end up focusing on the connection between, so they I think the problem these movies aren't as successful as the original is because they focus on trying to humanize Kong, because they assume that that's what's going to make us connect with Kong. But I think keeping him just a plain old animal is fine, because like the American population loves an animal, right?
Yeah.
Got, you know, if you kill an elephant, you're like a sinner for life in the eyes of the American.
No, yeah, well, don't fucking kill an elephant. Why would you kill
Thomas
an elephant?
Thomas Edison?
Thomas Edison, precisely.
Yeah, Topsy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why? I again, you know, just leave animals alone. Like, if you want to be left alone, leave other creatures alone. Like,
anyway. Well, I have a question for you. Why can't the sea monsters leave us alone? Huh?
Well, why did the sea monsters come to existence?
Well, fair. A fair rebuttal.
So, let's talk about Godzilla, right? 1954, the same year that Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa came out. And the same year that Sanshu the Bayleuf by Kenji Mizoguchi came out. I forgot the Ozu film. I mean, this is a prolific year for Japanese cinema. Actually, Takisha Shimura, who's the main samurai, kind of. He's like the main samurai in Seven Samurai, is in this film, is in Godzilla.
Who was he in Godzilla?
He was the doctor.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Godzilla came out in 1954.
Everyone, yeah, just so you know, this is like fresh in my memory because I literally just saw this
You
movie
just finished
podcast.
It? Okay.
I had never seen the original Godzilla. I may have actually seen the American edited version of
With
this
Raymond
Godzilla
Burr.
Movie.
Yeah.
Is that the guy who was,
Perry,
he was
Mason.
Perry Mason?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at that. It all goes around full circle.
It really does. Yeah.
I think I have seen that one. And obviously I've seen like the color versions of Godzilla.
Yeah.
And
it's just so ridiculous that that movie was even made, that they're like, oh, we should bring this movie to America, but we need an American in there. So let's just superimpose you into Tokyo, Japan.
You don't think that makes sense? Of course Americans aren't going to, because Americans couldn't. American audiences at the time could not probably wrap their heads around
You don't think anyone in America saw Seven Samurai the year it came out?
I don't think so, actually. No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Then how did people watch that film? How did it become so internationally wide known?
Elitists.
I mean, if you're talking about the American public, like
I'm talking about the American public, yes. I'm not talking about people in the film industry. I'm not talking about film cinephiles. I am talking about the good old fashioned American. I eat popcorn in my movie theater. American, who, let's be real, and I am not disparaging that population, because I, even though I'm a filmmaker, wholeheartedly put myself in that category more so, because I do enjoy making films. I wanted to make films to entertain, like just popcorn flicks. I didn't want to make art. That's my prerogative, you know?
I mean, okay, yeah. I think that this is now going to get into a question of, you know, well, what is quote-unquote art when it comes to cinema, and why can't they be both? You know, why is Seven Samurai... And this is not a question for you to answer. This is more a question for our society to answer in terms of, well, why is Seven Samurai quote-unquote art from cinema? Why? Because it's a Japanese movie?
That's
it's
a great
incredibly
question.
Incredibly entertaining.
You're right. I think it is. But I also think that Americans aren't going to connect with Asian characters. Then that is just the bias of the American. Why do you think it was remade? Oh, wait, no. Was it a remake?
It was remade as a Western.
Yes, thank you. So it was remade.
For The Magnificent Seven in 1960, about 6 years later. But that's also just because movies get remade, right?
It got remade. I feel like the reason it got remade
and retold I'm so glad that they made it as a Western and didn't tell a samurai story with a bunch of white people in it. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like American, like people who are listening to this episode, I really actually want to hear your opinion. Like, is Rolando being honest, or is he overestimating us?
Yeah, and I also feel like we have a smart audience, I feel like. Uh-huh. You know, so you ask your dummy friends. It's just like...
Of course, I can't speak to what people were watching in 1950. Well, I mean, 1954, this is the year that On the Waterfront came out with Marlon Brando, right? That's the film that won Best Picture that year. A Star is Born with Judy Garland. You know, these are some of the films that people were watching. So,
I mean, yeah. And I'm just
more diverse than what we're watching currently.
This is true. But I will say this, though. Watching this movie... And just doing my research on it, like the American version also stripped away all of that nuclear.
Of course, because they were responsible for it.
I'm well aware. So, I mean, yeah. Why do you think that is, though? Why do you think this is why they added Raymond Burr?
I guess I would agree with you in the sense where the Raymond Burr version is just a perfect example of American ignorance.
Yeah.
And also,
I mean, we got this- right. Yeah. We got right into it hot, so maybe we should talk
telling
a little
her
more about
story.
The film.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about it. Directed by Ishiro Honda, you know, who went on to direct a lot of kaiju films. This is probably the first kaiju film. It was distributed by Toho Studios, which is also famous for the fact that they are the studio that makes the kaiju movies. Godzilla. This is a film that pretty much deals with the sudden appearance of a giant sea creature monster. And it just so happens that his characteristics seem to be in line with nuclear war, right? His breath. It's pretty much nuclear breath.
Yeah. He was created as a result of nuclear testing.
Yes, he was. So pretty much,
yeah.
There is a freighter on near Odo Island, and that is where we first meet Godzilla. So pretty much he is born because of the nuclear test that they are doing with hydrogen bombs and stuff in the water, right? So he is a direct product of war.
And he is here to punish us. He is our payment. He's nature's payback.
He is,
for creating the nuclear bomb.
Yeah, so you're going to test your hydrogen bombs in the water. Well, then you're going to create a sea monster, and you have to deal with that. And all of these villages are feeling that they're getting attacks, and nobody knows what's happening, and all of a sudden it's there. And it's just them dealing with, oh my God, how do we deal with this? Especially because we're responsible for it. He's made out of the things that we're creating weapons on. So how do we counteract this, right? And it's a awfully... It's almost as if it's like, it's so filled with like actual fears and anxieties of that day and age that it's so interesting because it's also like direct. You could see that this is a post-bombing film.
Oh, you know, yeah.
The bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki that devastated the country of Japan. That's what I'm referring to when I say that. I just wanted to be clear in case anyone didn't know.
I think the whole world.
I would hope so, but you know,
only two cities in the entire U.S. have been ever bombed with atomic weapons in the world. Yes,
yeah,
and by Americans. And I think that's the thing. That is the sad fact that, like, I feel like even us as Americans, we still have not taken full responsibility.
No, people think that we needed to do that in order for them to end the war, and it's just. I'm going to say it right now. I don't care what the fuck. There's no way you can justify those acts, you know?
Lot of evidence that is showing now more and more. It's just like, we didn't need to. It was more of a show of power, a show of strength.
Yeah, no, it was. Well, that's what America does, right? We're the fucking Roman Empire of the world. So we do a lot of unnecessary shit just to
make it. It didn't go well for the Roman Empire, you know? But in terms of the nuclear fallout of the nuclear war,
yeah,
or our fears of nuclear war, right? I mean, even the design, the dinosaur, the Godzilla, has, like, you know, all the makings of, like, you know, those nuclear holocaust fears. I learned this. His skin isn't like scaly, it's textured to look like the scars that were left behind from the bombings in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah,
and his head is the shape of a mushroom cloud. See, and this was all intentional. And by the way, this movie looks phenomenal in black and white.
Yeah.
I'm used to the color Godzilla, which I think makes it obvious that it's just a guy in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Where in black and white, that looks like genuinely good still, even to this day. Black and white works for this movie.
Yeah. They restored this recently. The Criterion Collection did a beautiful restoration of this film.
Yeah. I think that's one that's available on HBO Max.
Yeah, it should be. I think it should be, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah. That's one I was watching. Because it wasn't dubbed. It didn't have Raymond Burr in it. It was the original version with the original soundtrack, right? Like the original. Like, not the American. Because the American version, I remember, had too much music.
It did, yeah. Yeah. The American, don't watch the Raymond Burr one, guys. I mean, watch it for kitsch value, but if you want to see a good film, watch the
Godzilla, King of Monsters, yeah.
Yeah, so don't watch that. Watch 1954's Just Godzilla.
And the other thing about this movie, though, that is not beautiful, it's kind of heartbreaking, but, like, the real focus is on the people and their plight.
Yeah.
Right? Which, even by today's standards, when it comes to, like, action movies, like, we don't get that. When the Avengers are out there saving the day, we don't see the consequences of their fights. Same thing goes with Superman, which we'll be covering soon, I think, right? Yet again. You know, when Superman was fighting Zod in Man of Steel, like, we didn't see any of those people dying. They were implied died, but, like, we don't get to see it.
No,
here in this movie, you see all that violence up front and center. We see the toll that Godzilla has taken on these people.
Yeah, this film, the message of this film, too, is the devastations and the horrors of war and what that does to people, what that does to a nation, right? So that's why this film is so impactful, because you really do get this distraught feeling of, like I said before, fear and anxiety. But overall, I would say the main word that I'm looking for is devastation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the film does end with a warning, you know. Actually, no, Takashi Shimura's character, I don't think he died. He's the one who gives the warning at the end, where he's like, if we continue with our weapons, if we continue down this path,
there might be another Godzilla.
Yeah, this will just happen again, you know, which is also a foreboding warner of, like, of war. And, you know that Japan denounced its right to declare war. The Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution is a clause outlawing war as a means to settle international dispute involving the state.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right.
Because war doesn't get you anywhere except devastation.
All right. I mean,
all right. So, So Godzilla, 1954. It was such a powerful film, and it sucks to think that that's where it came from, because this is also the film that sparked an entire film series that has nothing to do with the original film, where that film came from, maybe the first couple of films, and
they didn't touch upon, like, that's why I never cared for them, right? They were just like monsters fighting. I mean, don't get me wrong, I watched them because, like, I enjoyed watching the monsters fight, and I used to collect the toys, but I didn't care for them.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like Godzilla until I was much older and stuff. I wasn't one of those kids, you know. And by the time I saw it, I was like, oh, this movie actually has something to say.
Oh, my favorite toy was King Ghidorah and Space
Ghidorah.
Godzilla.
Oh, Ghidorah is pretty cool. Actually, one of the first times I saw anything Godzilla-ish was the South Park episode, Mega Streisand.
Oh.
But so anyway, so, you know, Godzilla, it came out, Godzilla came the monsters, and then they did a film right after it called Godzilla Raids Again. And then they actually didn't do a film until 1962's King Kong versus Godzilla. And that is what sparked the whole monster movie era, right? So after that, we got Mothra versus Godzilla. We got Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, the Astro Monster, Abira, right? We got all these different guys.
Space Godzilla.
Megalon, Hedorah, Mechagodzilla. Yeah, it's just pretty crazy.
But Ghidorah.
The first one is King Kong versus Godzilla. So you know how at the end of Godzilla 1954, they were like, hey, if we don't stop, he's going to be back. Well, guess what? They didn't stop, and he's back.
Was it the same Godzilla, or was it someone else? Because this one came out of, like a block of ice.
So how did the original Godzilla end?
He died. He died in with the doctor who created that bomb that atomizes oxygen.
Yeah, I guess technically then they say Godzilla, but it really could be just like a bunch of giant sea creatures who they just call Godzilla, I guess.
Okay.
They said he would be back. So, like, this would happen again. So
I am not caught up with my Godzilla lore, so I can't answer any of that.
Yeah, well, I actually didn't go back and I've seen Godzilla so many times that I didn't feel the need to rewatch it, but now you're asking questions and I'm like, fuck. Do I know the answer to this? Point is that he's back. And
he's back.
Pretty much the whole movie, you know, the plot's like the not Avatar. Really important. But they can't defeat him.
Black
and
ice.
Yeah. So in the original film, they actually found a way to defeat him, you know, with using their own weapons against him. But in this one...
Oh, weapon of mass destruction. That was... So that's the important takeaway from that movie, right? Like, it took a weapon of mass destruction in order to destroy this one. But the guy who created that weapon, he died with it in order to prevent humanity from ever getting their hands on it again.
Yeah, it's true. So how do you defeat him when you can't do that? Well, they have the brilliant idea of getting King Kong to do the fight for them.
I mean, that wasn't their idea. That was just like, oh, shit. Like,
I'm paraphrasing Kong here, but thank you.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it's just like, because I don't think... I mean, sure. How does a studio make money? You pit two monsters against
each
other.
Exactly. Well, I think this was one of the most successful films of the Godzilla franchise, like, ever.
I think it actually is. Yeah. No, it's true.
Like, when I was looking it up, it said this is the most attended film that ever came out. So people, like, they were like, oh my God, Godzilla's back and he's fighting King Kong. I am so there.
What do you think was the draw? Do you think it was Godzilla or was it that he's fighting King Kong?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, because also by 1962, you know, now there's enough of a gap in between, you know, the devastation. People are kind of getting over it. It's the 60s, right? Things are changing. Japan's back on his feet. And then there's the nostalgia of the characters, Godzilla and King Kong together in like a very fun way. You know, like, let's move on with our lives. Let's start having fun kind of a thing. This is very much my read about it. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think that that's also what sparked the whole, you know, 60s, 70s, and then when it got rebooted in the 80s, craze of these monster movies, you know, is how much fun they were. Also, when you look at films that were happening in the 50s Japan versus 60s Japan, 60s Japan is just like way more fun. And just like they started doing film noir and they started doing mob movies and they started doing all different types of cinema. Instead of just telling like these really profound humans, like humanized stories, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. So I, this is just my own venturing of Japanese cinema. This is kind of what I've noticed. So this would be my guesstimation.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Was this your first time watching the movie or had you seen this movie before?
I saw this movie years ago.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah. Cause I was like, whoa, I got high. I was like, oh my God, these two guys in these suits are really doing some great choreo here.
I wish I had gotten high to watch this movie. I feel like that would have been the only way to enjoy this movie because this movie is terrible.
It's not very good, no.
It is a terrible, terrible
and
movie.
And like, you're really just watching for the fight, which comes all the way kind of at the end.
Yeah, but they do have like, they do have a little smackdown early in like
they do.
Halfway through. It's like, I mean like little smackdown, literally. Like, I think like Godzilla smacks him around a bit and walks away.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what you came there for. And it's like at that time, too, you know that it's not going to be like anything crazy with special effects or anything. It's just going to be two guys in a suit. So it's either you're down for it and you're not. I was down for it. So
for me, it was just like there was so much cutting back to like this newscaster talking about like.
You saw the American version?
Was that the American version?
Were the people dubbed?
Yes,
yeah,
it was,
that was
dubbed.
The American version.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so we kept going to a newscaster talking about like the UN. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to go talk to. I was just like, I don't care for any of this. Just cut this movie in half. Just give me the fight. I don't need to see this. And the costume also for King Kong was awful.
He looked terrible.
That
he
was
really
just
did.
Not a. That was just. And I'm like, I could be forgiving of men in costumes for these like kaiju movies, but. This is just a sin upon our eyes.
Yeah. Well, it's weird to think that the same guy who directed Godzilla 1954 directed this film.
So he's in his, like, I need to make money phase.
Yeah, I need to capitalize off of my biggest hit ever, Godzilla, again.
And even the Godzilla costume was whack as hell.
Yeah. Well, that's because it's also, one, it's in color, two, it's very clearly a man in a costume.
Yeah, so here we go. So in black and white, when you're doing like the miniatures, because it's in black and white, your eye can like kind of fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
When you're watching those miniatures in colors, you're just like, those are fucking toys. Why? Like, I'm not. This,
there's no question like, about it. Yeah.
I felt like Sheryl Crow. This don't impress me much.
Oh, that's Shania Twain.
Tomato, tomato. Sorry.
Hopefully Rolando didn't upset any Shania or Cheryl fans out there.
They're out there.
They are out there.
They are going to come at me. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, so, you know, all we really care about when we're watching this film is that fight at the end. Did you enjoy the fight at least?
No.
So the only reason a person would really come to watch this, I mean, it's called King Kong versus Godzilla, right? You know that there is going to be a fight. There's going to be a battle between the two. That's the whole draw. The whole plot that leads up to it is just like such a waste of time.
It really is. Like, we need these berries for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know what the berries have anything to do with this. That's why they go to King Kong's island. I don't think it was called Skull Island.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. They go to his island. They discover, oh my God, look, this is the god that they worship, these natives. Let's take him.
Yeah. Maybe he can defeat him. Yeah.
I think that's literally no. Well,
it was called
Faroe
Island, by the way.
Faroe. All right. So, do you think it was named after? Wait, there was a Faroe character in in the original, right?
It might have been. I'm not sure of again. I haven't rewatched it recently, so.
Oh, it was, what's her name? Ann Darrow?
And no. Oh, you're talking about the original King Kong.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, her name was Ann Darrow. So it's not
Darrow. No, okay. So it's not. All right, I thought it was the name after her. All right. The point is they knock out King Kong and they start traveling with him across the sea. He the escapes.
Way they tie him up to the helicopters too is just so absurd.
This movie was just at a certain point I'm just like, Jesus Christ, like this is I can't believe I had to sit through Godzilla versus King Kong, and I was just like, this is the worst experience ever. And now, here I am, and I'm just like, it gets worse.
So, for me, I actually kind of, I feel the same way, but on the opposite side of the spectrum, where I'm like, oh my God, this is so absurd. This is so stupid. I love it, right? Like, everything that screamed, like, you know, when he would, like, punch Godzilla and the costume would, like, jiggle.
Yeah.
You know, like, those moments, like, when he stuffed the tree down his mouth and stuff, I was like, this is so campy. This is
it
so
was
delicious.
It was campy. We talked about this last week when I was just like, camp can sometimes be delicious.
It can,
and stuff. And
yeah.
I'll say. I mean, I don't know if this was campy because this was just like kind of just like lo-fi, low budget, low. This was just lowbrow. I didn't find it campy. I think for me, because some of the other Godzilla movies get way campier. For example, when they have the guy who is like a giant man in like a silver suit. Right? Like that guy.
Yeah. What was his name again?
I don't know.
Damn it.
I don't remember. I wouldn't know, but I remember that fight with Godzilla and him, and I think they were fighting Rodan or something. They were fighting another monster.
Yeah.
But that fight sequence is camp. This was just like kind of just like tragic.
Yeah. I mean, I would not recommend this film. Unless you're a lover of monster movies, you know, you want to watch the franchise, you want to watch them all, you like pretty bad camp. Not like super, well, I mean, it depends on your definition of super enjoyable camp. But yeah. Overall, I wouldn't really. Just watch the fight sequence on YouTube.
Do we want to spoil it for our audience?
Yeah, go for it.
King Kong wins.
So it's also implied that, especially because he comes back for many more movies, but it's implied that Godzilla just like kind of disappeared and then King Kong swam off in victory.
Yeah, the narrator is just like, we know it's a long journey, but we wish you the best, King Kong. It's just like, well,
we dragged you here, but you could swim back.
Yeah.
King Kong does win. But again, I think that Godzilla was just like, I'm going to go hide until I want to come back. Motherfucker.
There are rumors that there's a second cut where Godzilla wins, but these rumors are apparently unfounded and not true. But that's it. So this movie was just not good.
Not good. There's not much to say about it, to be completely honest.
I mean, you know what, guys? If you want to watch it, it's on YouTube, the full edit. I saw it on YouTube, and I was just like, Jesus Christ. The sweet relief came in the endless ads.
Yeah. So, you know, now we're going to go to our current time period where, you know, everyone's got like a cinematic universe, right? That's like the big thing ever since Marvel started doing it, is that everyone wants to create their own verse. And Legendary decided that they want to have their own monster verse. And really what that is just they rebooted Godzilla. And
are they allowed to call it a monster verse? Because I thought Universal was trying to do a monster verse.
Are you talking about like the Dracula and
Frankenstein? Yeah, Dracula, Frankenstein. Like they were going to try, and the Mummy.
Is that the Dark Verse, though?
They had a different name for it.
Is it? Maybe you're right, Eddie. I think you're right. I think it's called the Dark Verse.
Yeah, this is it, according to my resource, it's Monsterverse. Legendary's Monsterverse.
Couldn't it be called Kaijuverse?
No, it's called the Monsterverse.
All right, whatever. It's called the Monsterverse. I don't understand. There's only two monsters. How much of a universe can we create?
So,
no,
okay.
There's more than
did you
two
not
monsters.
See Godzilla, King of the Monsters?
No, but like Godzilla is the star.
Yeah, but that's also, you know, they start off with Batman, Superman movies, and then they branch off to the other people.
What? So we're going to get a Mothra movie? I can't wait. I can't wait to see Mothra do nothing.
You don't like Mothra?
I hate Mothra. Mothra's the fucking worst.
Back in 2015, Legendary actually announced that they intended on having a shared cinematic universe between Godzilla and King Kong. So they started with
Godzilla, Bryan Cranston, Aaron Johnson, and
really?
None
of the same cast is in it. I thought it was a
completely
different
thing. Because Aaron Johnson and this girl had no chemistry whatsoever, which was shocking.
Did you see it?
Yes. And
okay,
let me tell you guys, here's my unfiltered opinion on the King Kong. How do you kill off your best actor at the end of the first act? You explain that to me, Hollywood, because you have Bryan Cranston in this movie. How dare you kill him off? How dare you? And then I had to watch a whole movie of seeing Aaron Johnson trying to make it from one end of the city to another so he could reach the Olsen sister. No. No, thank you. All right? And I will also give this complaint. I'm okay with them with Hollywood with this artistic approach of trying to hide your monster, right? And they were trying to do, I think there were some times where it was done effectively where you're like hiding the action because you're really focusing on the people. The only problem was the people sucked and I didn't care to see their story. Give me a better story. That's it. And then I would be much more apologetic of like the action sequences and stuff. But like this movie was, I hated it. I hated it so much. I was so angry when I left the movie theater and I found out that critics loved this movie. And I was just like, you guys are wrong. This is a trick you guys are playing on me.
I'm almost sad we're not talking about that film.
Sorry. Did you not watch it?
No, I haven't seen any of these other films, which, you know, now that I've seen Godzilla versus Kong, I was like, damn, this movie would have probably made a lot more sense had I seen any of these other films.
I mean, probably. I didn't see Skull Island, so.
But you saw Godzilla, King of the Monsters, I assume.
I did see King of the Monsters.
Yeah, I remember you saw that together, Eddie? Theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about it. So, some of these characters did return, right?
Yeah, 11 from Stranger Things was there. Kyle Chandler was also back.
Yeah.
That's it, I think.
That's it? Was Alexander Skarsgård or was he in Kong?
No, he wasn't in either.
Oh, he wasn't in either.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I just assumed everyone was in a film before because of the way that the film introduces them. But
yeah. I'm pretty sure because... Skull Island, I think the main was the Rock in it? I feel like the Rock was in that.
No. Tom Hiddleston was in it.
Okay.
They also had Brie Larson, Samuel Jackson, John Goodman.
This sounds like John Goodman was in it.
John Goodman was in it.
Okay. Right. No, I like I said, I didn't see Skull Island. So
yeah, I didn't see that either. Yeah. But yeah, so King of the Monsters, right? I'm pretty sure Godzilla was a good guy in that movie. Was he not?
He was a good guy in both movies.
In the original? Like the first reboot?
The first one. Yeah. He was a good guy. A misunderstood good guy, but he was a good guy. He was fighting the bad guys.
And you don't know how Kong was portrayed?
Wouldn't know. I didn't care. I honestly had no desire of seeing Skull Island because I was just like, I don't. Because just from the head alone, this wasn't a remake of King Kong. This was more of a reimagining of King Kong. And I was just like, well, if I'm not going to see him run a rampage on the city, I don't want to see this movie.
Mm. I mean, well, I also don't care about new versions of Kong. Like I said, I quite enjoyed the original. The 2005 was 3 hours too long.
That movie's so boring. I saw it once and I will never watch it again.
Yeah. And so I was just like, I'm okay. Like, I just had no interest in it.
Yeah. Same.
But so in this film, though, if for those of you who have seen the film, it takes 5 years takes place 5 years after Godzilla defeated King Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
Kong is being held in a unit, pretty much, in a giant dome where they are, like, you know, pretty much containing him there.
Okay.
And is that's true, right?
Oh, yeah. You're saying that I saw this movie. Yes, this is true. I don't know. I didn't see Skull Island. So I don't know if that's how it ended, but yeah. The Monarch, by the way, who are like the conspiracy group behind, like, that's trying to contain all these monsters.
Mm-hmm.
They discovered, they call them Titans, right? And these Titans.
Yes, they call them Titans.
A whole balance to the universe or something. That's,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so. Actually, I've been, you know, describing the plots of a lot of these movies. So why don't you kind of just sum up this movie for our listeners?
All right. I'm going to sum this up for you guys as best as only I can. Godzilla is attacking a production warehouse or something, right? Axis? Was that the name of the company?
I think so.
I think this is what it was called. Anyway, the point is that he's attacking...
Apex.
Apex. He attacks his company in Florida. So the Floridians have to suffer not only through COVID, but a Godzilla attack. And, you know, now the whole world is just like, well, King, oh, Godzilla's now a bad guy. So what are we going to do? And I'm going to go into some spoiler territory here. But meanwhile, Apex is also looking for the source of all these Titan powers, which happens to be in the middle of the Earth, like in the Hollow Earth. And so that's where they hire Alexander Skarsgård to go to the middle of the Earth. But how is he going to get there? Well, he needs King Kong to lead the way. Apparently the way is just going down, though, so I don't know why King Kong, but whatever. King Kong is taken to Antarctica, where he shows them, oh, look, guys, we just had to go literally down. That's all you guys had to do. Why why did you take me from here? And King Kong is discovers that he is like part of a line of like great kings or something of animals his size. And Godzilla ain't feeling that. So Godzilla challenges him to a fight. They have a fight in Hong Kong. Bada bing, bada boom. Here we are. Oh, and now here we go to spoiler alert, guys. All right. So not only do they fight, after they get into a fight, they discover, oh no, we had to work together because we have a common enemy. And that common enemy is in its like debut in this universe, Mechagodzilla.
That's right. Yes, they stumble on them testing for Mechagodzilla. Yes.
And if you think this sounds familiar, that is because if you watched Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice, you know damn well that this is the plot of Dawn of Justice. Batman and Superman get into a fight, and they realize, no way, why are we fighting each other? We have a common enemy, and that common enemy is Doomsday. So,
yeah.
Yes. And well, yeah, Godzilla and King Kong discover that we have the same shared power. It comes through this source.
Yep.
In the middle of the Earth.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this like meme that someone posted, like this Photoshop photo where the two posters for King Kong versus Godzilla, right? Where it's like the hand. You just see the hand of one of the creatures, right? And then in the background you see the other one that he's about to fight. So it's like Kong. And then Godzilla, Kong, and then one for Godzilla. Someone photoshopped the two of them holding hands. And little did they know that they predicted the movie. I half expected King Kong and Godzilla to make out throughout this whole movie, to be honest.
Yeah, I could see that. Did you enjoy this film?
I enjoyed the fight sequence, I guess.
Really?
It was fine. Oh, I will say what I enjoyed about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is never a good sign for a good movie, but... I actually thought this movie had excellent sound design. I think if I heard this movie in a movie theater, the sound design was actually spectacular. The way they used silence to great effect because one of the characters was deaf. They didn't do it like in the way where you just do it on a cut. They actually kind of like they would bring it in ever so slowly. I think the movie had like really really interesting sound design, and I appreciated that. Visually, it was just, you know, it was two kaijus fighting each other in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I guess.
In the rain, I think. It was raining, too, wasn't it, Eddie?
At one point.
Yeah, you always need the rain, right? Because it makes them shinier.
Yeah.
I learned that in Pacific Rim.
That's true, which is very much an ode to kaiju movies. I feel like the cinematographer, maybe the director, you know, they definitely saw Blade Runner one too many times because I felt like so many people were lit by like neon lighting to the point where it was just like,
it's Hong Kong. God.
Yeah, okay, sure.
That's what Hong Kong looks like if I am to believe anything that Hollywood tells me.
Yeah, seriously. And yeah, the sound design was good. You know, there were a lot of elements about this film that were good.
What else do you think was good?
I think that the way that the director approached the fight sequences was pretty interesting.
Oh, actually, yeah, I'll say that. I agree with you. Like, where I actually did not like the fight sequences for, like, for Transformers, right? I think sometimes they're too messy. I don't know what's happening. All these moving parts. I can't make sense of it. This one, I could see what was happening. I understood who was getting beaten up and who wasn't.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You definitely had a good sense of the atmosphere there. The soundtrack used, so I was like, okay. Didn't really care for it. And I think that I was at a disadvantage not having one lost seen any of the other films because I was just kind of confused for most of the film.
You're like, why is King Kong in this, like, why is he trapped in this like hologram?
This is my intro to him. What?
That was an interesting intro to King Kong. Because I too was confused. I'm like, why is he trapped? I don't understand.
Yeah. So I wish I could respond more to this movie because I feel like, you know, with the way that I set up this episode and my relationship with the other characters, you know, I would have a strong opinion, but I kind of don't. I found it to be kind of boring. Except for the fight sequences. Now, if you were to ask me, what did you prefer, the 1962 fight sequences or this one? I'm going to have to go with 1962.
Because
I'm a fan of the camp factor, and I'm more so just a fan of, like, just watching two people fight instead of, like, all these different angles of CGI and all this stuff. Like, it was impressively done, but I also just kind of didn't feel like I was watching a fight.
I don't. If given a choice, I would pick neither. You could just kill me. Thank you. Yeah. No, I'm being really hard on Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus Kong. I don't know the title of this movie even, but I'm being a little hard on this movie only because the first Godzilla was such a disappointment, and I think I saw, if I remember correctly, I saw Godzilla versus the King of Monsters begrudgingly at Eddie's request. Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong. You wanted to see that movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I had no desire to see that movie because I feel like I was hurt by Godzilla. Godzilla let me down.
I also wanted to see it too because a girl from Stranger Things was in it.
That is not a legitimate excuse to watch a movie, but fine. I agree with you. I wanted to see how she would be in the film. And my God, let me tell you. Fine. She's good in Stranger Things and she's a decent actress in these movies, but the writers were really forcing me down this like a family drama that I just didn't care to see in Godzilla. And shockingly, the drama isn't picked up really here in this one, not to the full extent that it was in the first one. But can I just say, like, Kyle Chandler is such a terrible father because his daughter is off on an adventure in Hong Kong. You know that takes like 2 days. What? Like, on the next day, like, it's on day two when he finally texts, like, yo, girl, where are you? Godzilla is attacking Hong Kong. By the way, I'm in Hong Kong. And she's like, oh, my God, me too.
Yeah, what are the seriously. Chances? Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know. I don't understand why American filmmakers or storytellers here are struggling with, like, trying to make me connect. Like, they really work hard and trying to make me connect to the human element of these stories, but they focus too much on a singular family or a singular unit, and that is a hindrance because, especially when I'm rewatching the original ones, well, specific to Godzilla. Godzilla is not, we're following main characters, but, like, you know who suffers? The world, and we see that world suffer. In King Kong, so maybe the Kong element they got right, where I liked the little girl and her connection with King Kong. Did I understand it? No. But, you know, whatever. She's deaf. I get it.
Yeah. No, definitely. I feel like
What do you get about her?
That she's deaf and, like, she can communicate with him and... By the way, guys, King Kong can talk, apparently. We learned this.
Well, he signs.
No, he also said, oh. Don't you remember on the ship?
Yeah, I remember that.
Did I imagine that?
No.
He did say it, right? Mm-hmm. He said it. Yeah, I know he signed it, but he also, like, physically said it. I remember thinking, like, well, why is he talking to a deaf girl? She wouldn't. This makes no sense. That's what I thought at that moment. Anyway, sorry, guys. Yeah. Nicole, you were saying
No. I was just going to say, I feel like Titanic was able to, like, tell a story about a devastation of an event, but, like, you know, hone it down to a single story and have it connect and stuff.
But they still showed me the suffering.
They did. Right. I think Titanic is a good example of that done right. And, you know, this is a good example of it just not done right, where it's, like, too obviously trying to make a connection. And it's like, hey, man, I just came here for the fight. You know, it's like kind of you want to know what your audience came here for.
At least they gave you a couple of fights.
They did. Yeah. And they were good pace and they were well drawn out. And, you know, it was satisfying. But other than that, you know, there were a lot of elements to this movie that I thought were interesting. like the investigative podcast journalists and like, you know, yeah, like the conspiracy and stuff. Yeah.
They're really swarming media because we started watching The Mighty Ducks for the podcast because it's going to be an upcoming episode.
Oh, and you started. Just, wow.
Yeah. And let's just say there is a front and center podcaster in this show.
Wow. Okay.
He has the best line. He has the best line. He goes, I don't have more of a hockey body. I have more of like a podcast body.
Which is how I feel about me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's just see, like, I don't have same. A sports body, but I do have a podcast.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it. But yeah, and then there were also elements of, you know, conspiracy theories and just like all these things that like I was trying, you know, like it's well aware of the fact that right now the world is super into conspiracy theories and like is the government lying to us and, you know, oh, here's the truth that you really want to know about this, this and that. So this film really played into that. And it's just like interesting when Hollywood tries to play into those things because it's like, are you trying to poke fun of it? Or are you just trying to...
Oh, like really? That's reading a lot into this. I don't know.
Well, I mean, whenever Hollywood like notices a trend happen in society and then they address it in their movies, I'm always interested in seeing the way that they address it, right?
I mean, I felt like this was a ripoff of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Marvel Universe, right? Like, yeah, there's a secret but we've always believed there's a secret organization that's Men in Black.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, know? Well... Hollywood loves secret societies and secret organizations yeah. too. But this was something the other films didn't have.
Oh.
This is a new, like 2021.
Fine. Maybe this franchise has it because Monarch is like your big conspirator something in this thing. I don't know.
Is it Monarch? No. They're more Monarch, like, yeah. Monarch, they deal with more.
Apex. They were against Apex. But Monarch is a company or the branch of government that is monitoring all the Titans. Monarch.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting as all as like all of these elements that they like, oh, how do we tell the Kong and Godzilla story? Oh, well, we got to throw conspiracies in there and big government corporations containing them. So it's interesting how you decide in what way you get to tell these people's these character stories in this day and age. And yeah, I guess I just wonder if they're kind of like mocking people for like their overall like obsession with these kind of ideals or not, or if it's so prevalent today that they couldn't help but like use it as an easy way to tell the story.
I don't know. The reason I just disagree with you is because like it wasn't being told in a way that like because you. So the problem with your my flaw with your theory here is that Q and like the conspiracy that's going on in real world today is actually QAnon? Like. Yeah, like that would be like the major, that would be like the conspiracy, right? That's going on right now. But that has an actual following. Like this movie made it seem like there was only one person following him, and that was Eleven from Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, you know that's also them saying, giving a commentary where like nobody cares about conspiracy theories, nobody believes in you and stuff. I mean, of course, that's the only thing I have to kind of look into because there's not much going on within
that's
this film.
That's the only depth that you were able to pick up in this movie.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, I appreciate the filmmaking that happened. Like, you know, there were some shots that it made it almost look like as if there were like cameras attached to the bodies of Godzilla and Kong. So you kind of got like the sense of like a POV and all this and... Just the shots were like not confusing. I could actually follow the fight. That was really nice to see, which is something that I don't see very often. But at the same time, although it is impressive, you know, I'm just watching CGI. I mean, I'd rather watch guys in suits fight, personally.
I would rather watch.
At least I'm watching choreography.
No, I see. This is where I am as a watcher. I want a mix of practical and CGI. Where you get the best of both worlds. I think you can do someone in a costume.
Absolutely. And that's a
and
nice
then clean it
in
up
between
with
place.
CGI.
Sure. Stuff,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Not motion capture, though, because that's obviously what Hollywood would be thinking. It's like, yo, we'll give him a guy in a costume. He's just wearing a green suit. Not the same thing, guys. But anyway.
No, I agree. Eddie, I don't have much to say about this. So
I'm just curious if Eddie has anything to say about this because I think he only watched the movie because we were coming on the podcast. Did you want to see this movie, Eddie?
I would have seen it. I mean, definitely would have seen it in the way. Like, I would have not gone to the movie theaters to see it. Mm. Even though my family did, and they really enjoyed it. They saw it in IMAX. And they saw it for the action.
They paid IMAX money for this?
They saw the action, yeah.
They enjoyed it, at least, right?
Yeah, they had fun.
Oh, I will say this. The movie is doing well in the box office.
It is. It's probably the most successful film at this rate.
Post-COVID.
Year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Post-COVID. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big stipulation, but...
Did bigger than Dizzy.
What has Disney done?
Mulan? Raya and the Last Dragon.
Oh, I thought that was a Disney Plus exclusive. I didn't even know.
No, that was released in theaters, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. The point is, I don't know. Like, this was this. Do you think this movie was needed, Nicole? That's
absolutely not. No. I mean, I think that everyone, all these different movie studios are trying to have their competing universe worlds to compete with Marvel. You know, like right now, Disney is just killing it. Because they own Star Wars and Marvel and stuff. And all Disney these other companies are right. Godzilla. I heard, yeah, they're bidding hardcore. I think that they're all just like gasping for breath, trying to keep up and stuff. So that's the existence of them. And like all of these new commentaries that they're trying to put into these stories is at the end of the day unneeded, because we don't need you to provide any new, more commentary about these characters. They were kind of already perfectly established in their original films. Just give us the action. This film gave it to us better than it did maybe the 1962 one. But overall, personally, me, and I'm not the biggest monster movie fan. I have appreciation for the original films. But I was just like, that was fun. Next. So no, indeed. It wasn't needed. Next indeed, yeah.
I'm just thinking right now of like, I'm just thinking right now of like a Disney-owned theme park ride for like King Kong versus Godzilla. You'd be like on a train or something, and then like,
yeah. Well, isn't there a Skull Island ride at Universal?
Is there?
I think so. They brought back a Kong ride, but it's like a Skull Island ride.
Yeah. Whatever. No, I don't think this movie was needed at all. Nor did I think the first one was needed. So there you go.
Yeah.
I don't need
the
to
first
live in
one
a world.
In the 1962 King Kong versus Godzilla. Okay.
I don't need to live in a world where both King Kong and Godzilla exist and are going to duke it out.
Yeah, what a terrifying world. I would be like, "Holy shit. I don't want to leave my house. I need to go live underground."
I mean, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you're right. Like what? Like if you're a human being, right? You just see a whole city getting like demolished by these two gigantic kaijus, and just like, all right.
And like this Godzilla is also fucking way more badass, or at least the way that they depict his, you know, abilities is just like horrifying. But I'm glad that they have their, like the 2021 Godzilla, the improved Godzilla. I love that they maintain their at least Godzilla's original, you know, like cry. And his noses that has remained the same, and the sound design of the character of Godzilla is so perfect.
Sure.
Also, I think the music from the 1954 Godzilla is one of my of the best movie music ever. It's so freaking good. So again, for me, hands down, Godzilla's the winner.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this: the only Godzilla I ever liked was a Matthew Broderick movie starring Leon the Professional.
Yeah, with that Puff Daddy song.
Oh my God, the Puff Daddy song. Yes.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Maybe I'll make a montage of these movies to that song.
I wonder. I don't.
It's called Come With Me.
Huh?
It's called Come With Me.
Come with. I'm thinking, for some reason, the only song that comes to mind is LL Cool J's song for Deep Blue Sea. And that is not the correct one.
That is not it. No. It's so the Come With Me by Puff Daddy was based off of Led Zeppelin's Kashmir. So,
that's it. Yes.
So
I remember that music video. But that is the only one. That is my true Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anyone says. That is my true Godzilla. That is the only one, as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad I waited to the end because no one can come at me now.
Yeah.
But,
for sure.
No, I don't think this movie was needed. So, that
not
is
at
that.
All. Yeah.
I don't know. Did you guys watch Godzilla? Did you guys enjoy Godzilla versus King Kong?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see Skull Island too? And are we just wrong? Like, should we watch it? Or let me know.
Yeah, please share us your thoughts, guys. You can email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. Hit us up on social media at Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals, Twitter at remakespodcast. And we have a hotline. Rolando, what is that number that they can contact us at?
That's right. We do have a hotline. So call us and leave a voicemail at 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326. Leave us a voicemail because we just might play it on the air.
Yep. And until next time,
stay original.